Decades before Linda Thomas Greenfield was confirmed as U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations in 2021, she was a graduate student at UW-Madison, earning her master's degree in public administration. She went on to work in the Career Foreign Service for 4 decades and left her U.N. ambassador post this year. Now she's returning to Wisconsin for a talk hosted by the La Follette School of Public Affairs. The event's called The Art of Negotiation. It's Tuesday at UW-Madison's Memorial Union. Kate Archer-Kent spoke with Ambassador Thomas Greenfield last week about the state of international relations and how to interact with people who have differing opinions.
You've worked on issues related to Africa throughout your career, and then in September you announced that the U.S. would supply more than $400 million in additional humanitarian aid to help with the crisis in Sudan. And I'm wanting you to bring us up to speed. What is happening there? What kind of suffering are Sudanese people experiencing?
Thank you so much for asking that question, because sometimes the press and the world ignore the situation in Sudan because there's so many crises happening elsewhere in the world that get more attention. But more than 25 million people in Sudan have been forced from their homes or on the verge of starvation because of a civil war that is taking place between two generals, two men who are fighting for their ambitions, not fighting for their people, not fighting for their country, but fighting for positions against each other. And more than 1 million of those people have gone across the border into the country of Chad. I visited Chad twice during my tenure as ambassador and saw the misery, saw the starvation, and saw the lack of hope. One young girl told me that after being raped, she was a student and she'd lost her ambition. Mm-hmm. And so that $400 million will help her regain her ambition, but it also will feed people who are on the verge of famine.
You know, it's nearly 7,000 miles separating Wisconsin from Northeast Africa. And I know you get this question, but why is it important to reach more stability in this region? And why should the U.S. and us here in Wisconsin be interested in this? Have a stake.
Thank you again for that question. I used to answer that question with a simple response, and it was that Americans, as people, as a country, we care. We care about what is happening elsewhere in the world. But there is a bigger response to that, and that is if instability is happening someplace in the world, it does have an impact on us. We may see it in terms of extra migrations to the United States. We'll see it in terms of conflict. We have Americans who live and work in these countries. Their lives are in danger. So it does have an impact on us. And again, I do think as Americans, we care. We have a sense of compassion that I'm very, very proud to be associated with.
In recent months, we've seen the U.S. cut back on its funding for foreign aid that includes Sudanese refugees. What might happen when these people are cut off from this funding?
Well, we've already seen the results of that as we start to hear from various places in the world that people are desperate and that they are facing starvation. But even more important here in the United States, we have farmers who provided that assistance and their products are sitting on their farms or in ports not being moved. We have American jobs that are connected to our aid programs, and those jobs also have been impacted.
Has it been difficult for you to see the Doge team and Elon Musk trying to permanently close USAID, which, you know, has aligned with so many of your important causes like food security and human rights?
You know, my heart is breaking. I have worked on these issues for my entire career. In fact, more than half of my life, I came into the Foreign Service at 29. And I remember my first visit to a refugee camp with a USAID employee who had committed her life to supporting humanitarian programs. And I kind of learned the job from her and many others from USAID. And so my heart is breaking for those people. It's breaking for the people that they helped. And it's breaking for their families.
The Trump administration has been framing these cuts as canceling programs that did not serve the core interests of the U.S., also alleging fraud and misuse. When you were ambassador, how did aid programs serve the interests of the country, but how did agencies also prevent fraud or misuse of funds?
Now, in my early years in the Foreign Service, I worked as a refugee coordinator, and that job was to provide assistance to refugee camps, and some of that assistance was provided by USAID. My responsibility was to ensure that there was no waste, there was no fraud. And so I traveled on little planes that looked like they'd been put together by bubblegum and wire into remote areas to put eyes on the situation on the ground to ensure that food was going to the people who were being, that the food was being provided to. So I don't deny that on occasions we would find some areas where there were difficulties, but the purpose was to make sure that that didn't happen and to ensure that it stopped and to hold people accountable who were taking advantage of our aid programs. So I have heard the complaints, I've heard the accusations, and my response to that is that's why we have people like me, people like our USAID colleagues who are monitoring, who are evaluating these programs to ensure that the programs are meeting the requirements that were put in place when we made the decision to provide assistance.
We're talking with former UN Ambassador and UW-Madison alumna Linda Thomas-Greenfield about her decades in foreign service and her upcoming talk at her alma mater. Ambassador, when our attention is focused on Russia's war on Ukraine or the conflict in Gaza, what happens about crises in Africa?
They are ignored, they are forgotten, and they are neglected. And having served most of my career in Africa, I committed myself to ensuring that they would not be forgotten. So when I took my visits to Chad, to the refugee camps there, I carried press with me. I actually had NPR with me. I had MSNBC with me. I had Reuters with me. And on every trip, I ensured that I brought the press so that they could focus attention on neglected situations like Sudan or Democratic Republic of Congo, like Somalia, that you don't read very much about in the news at all.
I want to turn our attention to Gaza. As head of the UN Security Council, you had voted against multiple measures for ceasefires in Gaza. What would you say to people, to students who protested here in Wisconsin and elsewhere that are still upset about the lives lost? And as we see Israel resuming airstrikes on Hamas targets in Gaza?
Well, first thing I would say is their protest, their anger is heard, and it was taken into account as we tried to figure out a path to a diplomatic solution to the situation in Gaza. And while there were some resolutions that we voted against, people have ignored the fact that there were a number of resolutions that we allowed to pass. And those resolutions dealt with the humanitarian situation. Those resolutions that we put on the tables, the Russians vetoed a resolution that we put on the table calling for a ceasefire, calling for the release of hostages and demanding that Hamas be condemned for the actions that they had taken. And so while the situation now has gone back into conflict, I am very pleased that many of the hostages have been released since I left my position. And this was a major, major goal of ours, getting the hostages released and getting assistance to the desperate people in Gaza. Diplomacy is hard. I would say that regularly. I'd say it in speeches in the Security Council. And a lot goes into diplomatic efforts and a lot goes into negotiations. And when we have resolutions, we're negotiating a lot of detail. And sometimes we get what we want and what we need and what we think is important to address the situation. And other times we don't. And in those situations, we're forced into a position of vetoing a resolution or into abstaining on a resolution that allows that resolution to pass. So I understand the frustrations that students felt. I talk to demonstrators on a regular basis outside our mission. I spoke to Palestinians. I met with hostages, and I still feel their pain.
When you mention the release of hostages and that diplomacy is hard, it makes me think about your upcoming talk about the art of negotiation. Why is negotiation like an art form in your eyes?
It is an art form because it's not, there's no recipe for negotiations. There's not an agenda that allows you to go from point A to point Z and get out of negotiations what you want. And different people have different negotiating styles. And my negotiating style has always been one in which I listen to my adversaries because I want them to listen to me. And so it's about showing a level of respect. You don't have to agree with people when you're sitting in a negotiation, but you have to have enough respect for them that they will listen to you and that you will listen to them. And then you get closer to each other. And eventually, and it doesn't happen in one meeting or two meetings or even five meetings. Eventually, you get to a place where you have a meeting of the minds and you come out with a settlement.
Ambassador, are there lessons from your international negotiations that you'd like to see domestic leaders apply perhaps more broadly to working across the political aisle here in our country?
You know, I think and politics and diplomacy are similar, but there are some massive differences. But I think the one common denominator for me is respect. And the second part of that respect is being able to listen. And so in order to come to agreements, you have to hear out the other side. And the other side has to hear out you. And then you eventually come to a place where you don't get everything you want, but you get some of the things you want, and the other side gets some of the things that it wants. And you come out with something that I think in the end, everyone is satisfied with.
It's not an all or nothing type of proposition.
It's not an all or nothing. And if you go for all or nothing, you rarely will win. And nobody wins when you go for all or nothing.
Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, it's been an absolute honor. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to speak with you, and I'm looking forward to being on the university's campus next week.
That was Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations from 2021 to 2025. Kate Archer-Kent spoke with the ambassador about her Foreign Service career and a talk she's giving at her alma mater, UW-Madison. She speaks at the school's Memorial Union on Tuesday. Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, egg prices have been on a roller coaster. A Kenosha diner is adding a surcharge to menu items. One egg, $1. Two to three eggs, $2 more.
and our full garbage plate, which has 5 eggs, we're charging you an additional $3.
How a restaurant owner and an egg farmer are managing the egg crisis, that's next on WPR News.